The Brian Golf Show.
Four.
Presented by Cobra Puma Golf.
That was an excellent shot.
Yeah, real good form.
First time on The Brian Golf Show since we've moved the podcast to the Brian Golf Studios. That's what I've named it. We've got Johnny Wonder, you know, my good friend and partner, Battle at the Beach. That's what you're always going to be known as. And basically the biggest golf club nerd in the world. That's what I'm giving you the title as. Do you agree on that?
Wow. For the function of this show, I will take the title and wear it proudly.
Well, good, because that's your purpose here. So can you also confirm that we are going to, now I'm going to drop this pod on the normal, we drop a pod every Tuesday, but are we going to be able to get Johnny on potentially for an additional pod on a weekly basis to talk equipment?
It's an honor and a privilege to be able to work with you on a weekly basis, Brian.
That's amazing. And I can sense the sarcasm, but I also know that it comes from that of love. It comes deep down and it's all about love. True speak. Look, Mel and I have a lot of fun doing a podcast. We want to keep it fun, light. And, you know, we obviously own a golf shop and we sell golf clubs, but I think it's kind of good to, you know, talk equipment with somebody who can truly kind of, you know, get on my level, who's actually, you're on a whole nother level than I'm even on. You're as golfed out and golf clubbed out as anybody I've ever known.
Yeah, it's what I do for money. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be a club nerd for years and years, and somebody had the good graces to pay me to do it. So it's the perfect storm of everything in that case. So happy to help.
That's good.
Well, whatever.
I don't really want to skirt around the topic here at all. I know that you have been in America here for a few weeks. It's been good. And now you're back in Canada as we record this. But I know when you were here, you got to kind of go through the ringer, obviously create a lot of content for golfwrx.com, but also a big part of that, who I believe is a big sponsor on your podcast, Titleist, you got to hit the new TSI wood line, the metal wood line, and I would absolutely love, and I know everyone else would love, to hear Johnny's thoughts on that on this podcast.
Yeah, it was interesting. I haven't hit a Titleist driver well since the 975D. Like, for whatever reason, I've just, you know, I've always wanted to make them work. Like, King drivers and Titleist drivers for me are always those ones I'm like, God, I really want that to work. And it just never did. Like, you know, TaylorMade just kind of always took over. And when I got to, because the way that they do it, I can give you this whole spiel, but the way that they do it for people in my function is, under normal circumstances, when the coronavirus, you know, craziness isn't going on, usually you'll get invited out to whatever their facility is, you know, where in this case it was EPI or, you know, State or, you know, Scottsdale National. You get to go to these places. It's just stand alone, or, you know, if you don't even look at clubs, just getting in there is pretty cool. And so I don't want to say I had any trepidation going into this one, because, you know, I'm buddies with Jimmy Walker and I talk to Charlie Howell a lot. I talk to a lot, and they were really jacked up on this driver. You know, their things were kind of like, you know, notice this, like, you'll like this. And none of that conversation was really around my ball speed. Like, it wasn't like, oh my God, it's so long, it's so this. It was like, you're going to like this nuanced part of the driver, and you're going to notice this versus this. And so when I got there, you know, and I was in sort of a club nerd rabbit hole with my gamer, which is a sim, which is a driver I adore. But I started messing with shafts and messing with the loft sleeve, and a lot of it was just for shits and giggles. And when I got there, I kind of told my fitter, I'm like, look, I've been jerry rigging my driver, so I'm going to hit him just to warm up. But like, as far as the comparison is concerned, it's not going to be apples to apples. Like, my driver's, you know, I'm hitting it good, but it's not spinning at all. So, you know, it's not going to look super sexy on TrackMan. So, you know, I hit a few drivers, and the first thing that I was really hoping was that I could find a driver in my preferred loft face angle setting, which is like, you know, 9 degree driver opened up like a half degree, and see if I could still get that high ball out of it with some spin, because I tend to not spin it all that much. And at the same time, not have to change the shaft profile all that much. So I'm sort of leaning on the head. Like, I hope this head launches it high enough and at the same time gives it spin.
Right.
So that's exactly what this driver does. So for the people out there that want to know, if I would sim, like I have that, like I call it like a screw you ball. Like every once in a while I can hit up on it and catch it the right way and launch it at like 1400 and it'll spin at like 1750. And for a guy with 155 ball speed, I can carry it out there 285, 290 because the balls, like the launch conditions are just optimal. The only problem with that is I can only do that about 2 out of 10 times. And the other balls are, some are okay, but the other ones, you know, could go all over the place. They could go center face, wide right, center face, low left. I mean, they could go all over the place. So that's a lack of spin. So this Titleist driver, I noticed that when I hit that same 2 out of 10 ball, I was doing it more often, but at the same time, it was spinning a little bit more, staying in the air a little bit longer, but it was still carrying the same distance. So immediately I'm like looking at the fitter, like, oh, that's actually kind of crazy. It's kind of like what the 770 did, the new T770 iron did to me. I'm like, are you telling me I can hit this as far or close to as far as my gamer, but it's going to spin at the same time? And that's what I found. So when you guys go do your testing and, you know, you're all geeked out on the TrackMan numbers about ball speeds, you're going to have to look about 3 or 4 lines down and look at the spin, the launch, and exactly what value you're getting, because the value of the TSI driver does not sit at the ball speed line. It sits down in the spin and the dispersion line. That's where this driver is going to outpace a lot of other drivers. And I'm not convinced it's the longest one out there. I don't think anything can be longer than spin. But I'm going on a rant. I'm just trying to get this full thought out. If driver category has 5 criteria. So if you have, you know, spin, ball speed, you know, launch, peak height, all that stuff. Like the Titleist driver is going to get 7 to 8 out of 10 in all those categories. They're never going to hit 10 out of 10. Like sim would be ball speed and launch would be like 10 out of 10, but you're going to lose it on dispersion. You're going to be like 4 or 5 out of 10 in dispersion or stability. So, that's just for me. So that's what the Titleist driver does. If you want the nuance of the nuance, like that's what it does. So when you're out there testing, you know, open your little baby brains up a little bit more past the first couple of sex lines and get down to the bottom lines of that TrackMan data, and then you'll see what this thing can do. And that's why I call it a golf course driver. You got to get on the golf course.
Well, and that's a good thing too. Yeah, that's a great thing. And you said you were going on a ramp, but like, that's the whole point of this. I want to get as much, you have all this information. You're one of the only guys that are at least allowed to talk about the experience that I, you know, can actually talk about the experience. So that's kind of what I wanted. At the same time, you know, you hit something great, which is the golf course driver. You know, it's, hey, that's a great ball if you're doing a, you know, Foresight Sports GC Quad, like long drive competition, and you want to just hit this screw ball, and it's a little high off the sweet spot and little toe, and it's going to just go so high and it's going to go so far. Your ball speed's going to be what it's going to be. But the metrics of the sim, you know, and some low spin drivers like sim, they're going to create that crazy, like, oh shit, did that just happen? Like, did I really just hit it that far? Or is the launch monitor broke? Whereas, you know, I was working with a player yesterday, dude, I mean, like this guy needed spin. He's out there spinning it, God, 800 RPMs off the driver, like cannot generate enough spin. And then we got him up to like 17, 18, and then 2000 RPMs of spin. And it was like, dude, you are going to actually be able to play golf now because your ball is staying in the air and it's not just nose diving, you know, just dead left every single time. It was quite amazing. Now that person was in a 10-year-old driver and a shaft about 2 cycles in flex, too soft for him. So, you know, go figure that one. But nonetheless, what I'm excited about, you know, just from one, they're keeping kind of a similar look, I'm assuming, but it looks like there's some actual technology that we can see. It's very visual. To me, on the outside, looking in, the TS line 2 years ago that was released was like, we put all this research and development into this, and we were tired of being the slow driver that spins a bunch. We want speed. So let's go on this mission to find speed. So they found ball speed. But visually, it wasn't anything where I'm like, man, this thing's like packed with technology, right? But then you look at this new driver, the face. I'm just speaking on the TSI-3, the weight pad in the back. It's like, man, this looks like it can actually do something. So speak to that. I'm assuming that's there for stability, forgiveness, and then anything you can tell us about the face. I know it's with this company, ATI, who deals with aerospace technology and metals and all of that. So explain, if you can, how that's going to help a golfer.
Yeah, I can't get too far into the tech story yet, just with the embargoes, and you know, we can only speak about the performance and what we experience. You know, sorry to disappoint, but you know, obviously we'll be doing some huge write-ups on it, and because it's more than the face. I mean, they kind of threw the kitchen sink at this thing, and they actually did something that was really, really clever that you'll see, which is something I haven't quite figured out why the other OEMs haven't done it. But you know, as far as the feel, like if you want to know what the face feels like, so if Sim, and the reason I use Sim is like, Sim's going to go down as, you know, one of the top drivers ever, you know, created. I mean, I think that driver's a complete unicorn, and you know, it has everything about it. I mean, the only thing I would change about the Sim for me is I wish it was a little bit more forgiving on, you know, for me, inside out path center hit. You know, if you're not quite in the box and you hit it out of the center of the face, it has a tendency to kind of fly wherever it wants to fly, you know, the wrong way. That's right. The only thing I would change about it. But the feel of the TSI, it doesn't feel like drivers that are coming out today, which has got that real hammerhead, kind of like you hit it and it's like a brick wall and the ball flies off the face. Like the Titleist face actually feels a little softer. Like you can feel the ball on the face a little longer than you do with everything else. And I kind of dig that. I used to not like that feeling so much. I felt like it, you know, it was coming off slower, but then you look up and the ball's just kind of flying out there and staying in the air. So that face, and you'll get some more data on, you know, some more tech data on this when we write the articles, but it's still a fast face. It's just, but it's the difference between like hitting a P790 or hitting a P7MD. It's like the difference between a forged blade and a, you know, player's distance iron. But the ball's still flying the same way. So the face technology that they built in there is new. You know, it's a new thing. It's not just a hot face. There's a little bit more to it. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of, one of the other things that I responded to is the way that the face felt and also the way that the face sounds. But it doesn't sound like the Sim, because to me, the Sim's got the best sound, especially if you have the middle of anything I've ever heard in my life.
It's got a good crack. It's like, it's not harsh, but it's got a good crack.
Oh my God. If you hit the Sim in the middle of the face, it's like your ego goes up like 9 points. So like you feel like, you know, it sounds like it does on TV when Rory smacked one. Like, oh my God. But the Titleist has the same type sound, but it's got a little bit of a ting to it. So if the players that want to have that kind of Callaway kind of ting, you know, they want a little bit of that, you're going to get it. It doesn't sound as meaty as the Sim, but it's, you know, it still sounds great. You know, you're not going to have a lot of players that don't like the way it sounds. I mean, if you don't like the way the Titleist sounds, then you probably shouldn't be playing golf, because you're picking out stuff that doesn't exist, I guess. You know, you're trying to find fault somewhere. But yeah, it's a unique, it's a very, very different Titleist driver. I felt like, as opposed to what Titleist typically does, which is in I'm noticing Cobra's even doing, is they're taking the idea from, you know, a few years ago and just trying to add a little nuance to that idea every cycle. Like TaylorMade did this year, they kind of threw everything out the window and created something brand new. Kind of like what Cobra did with the F9, was completely different idea. And, you know, for everybody that's going out and buying drivers, usually in the conversation, especially for better players, it's always stem versus Payton G410. It's kind of like what I've noticed. You know, the better players either want one or the other. And I think Titleist is going to slip right in between those two. Because there's kind of, if Payton G410 and Stem had a baby, this would kind of be it. And it's not as stable as one and not as fast as the other. It just kind of sits in the middle. It's like the middle child.
That makes sense. Well, and that kind of brings me to like my next question, because obviously Titleist does the 2-year cycle. I respect it. I love it. That's their model. And I think there's a lot to that, especially, you know, for people that are like, man, I just bought the new driver. And now all of a sudden, 8 months later, they're teasing another new one. My question is always like, when TS came out, it was great and it won plenty of battles and still does to this day. But then here come like the yearly driver release companies from, or you know, the companies that like their driver companies, the Callaways, TaylorMades, Cobras, where the number one focus is we need to sell drivers. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, Titleist was cool for like 3 months, but then all this stuff dropped and now they're taking a backseat to all that. Do you see it kind of, I don't know, holding performance due to some of the things you were saying?
Yeah, I mean, you know, back really quickly, just to address like the 2-year cycle thing, I'm a big advocate of the 2-year cycle, because I feel like we don't spend enough time with our golf clubs. And I can attest to that, because being in the business, like you get, you know, to look and hit and try and a lot of stuff. And what I noticed for my own game is it was almost too much stuff. It's like every single time I start to get used to something, something else comes in. And I think what's best for golfers is a 2-year cycle. I think the way Ping does it is very smart. Like they kind of hold pat. And if a driver's really performing well, they won't release the new one until the one that's working well sort of dies down. And, or unless they have something that is monumentally better than what they released before. And that to me is what's best for golfers. I understand that there's marketing goals and you got to hit numbers and, you know, cycles are cycles. But for the golfers, you know, the people that are the gearheads, you sort of want to get a driver every 2 years as opposed to just, you know, copy and paste in the new one every year and just grab in the new one, whatever's out. You know, you really don't. Yeah. The technology doesn't leap forward. I always compare it to like the real estate market back in like 2000 to 2010. It's like when my house is going, it's not like that anymore. It's like now drivers get 2 or 3% better every year. Not going to pick up 20 yards by switching to a new driver year to year. It's not. You might pick up a yard. I guess I would hope that golfers would look at different reasons to buy a new driver and not just distance. So, you know, stability and all these things and being able to hit shots with your driver are reasons to look at a new driver every year. So, you know, if you're like, I need to pick up 20 yards, how about hitting 2 or 3 more fairways? So when you go to your fitter, like you got to get honest and be like, you know, this is kind of where I'm at and I'd like to just hit the fairway. I actually want to score better.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, winning a long drive in the family scramble.
To your point, I think too, the only reason somebody should switch should come down to, does it actually perform better? Is there a true gain? And then the other part is, was there something about my last driver that the new one, you know, just improved on a little bit? Like for me going from F9 to Speed Zone, I like the top of that head better. So I like looking down at Speed Zone, even though I probably didn't hit it that much better. It wasn't that much faster than F9, you know, but for me, there was an appearance thing, which is why I made a switch like that. And then once I got comfortable with it, I did end up hitting it very, very good, but I had that thing pretty dialed until I cracked my head. You know, that driver I played at Battle at the Beach with, I hit it pretty good.
Yeah, you pounded it.
Dude, I hit it pretty good. And then all of a sudden, I cracked it one day in the bay and I put the backup in and it was good. But man, I know you can attest to this. It's just not the same when you've got like your unicorn and something happens and then it just goes away. And, you know, so I've been like on driver search ever since. And it's kind of depressing.
Such a, like, you know, what you said about wanting to do, you know, wanting the new one. And this is for the general golfer. I mean, and I don't want to sound braggadocious, but like we're in jobs where it's sort of our job to try a bunch of new stuff and sort of hit the new stuff when it comes out. That's our function as a fitter or as a media person. Like you got to put the new stuff through its stretches. But for the general golfer, what Brian said about, you know, wanting to look down on something that inspires trust or a little bit of a better feel or confidence, like that's a reason to look at a new driver. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately that's going to lead to new performance or, you know, different type of performance. Because if you're not picking up something in your fitting, or if you're not finding a new shot or eliminating one that you hate, then you're not getting fit properly and you're not doing it for the right reasons. You know, we all love to hit it a long way, but at the same time, what I'm noticing is that, one, the drivers aren't getting that much longer, and I'm more concerned, you know, for my own game with, like, I want to hit two or three more fairways around, and I want my miss hits to actually hit the short grass as opposed to flying in the bunker 20 yards right of the fairway. Like, you know, that's what I want. So, you know, and Brian, you're good at articulating this to your clients, but it's like, you know, what are your goals? Like, what do you want this driver to do? And just go a long way to me ain't going to cut it. It's got to do a lot more. It's, you know, drivers have to be able to perform when you're at your best and perform when you're not. They didn't wake up the right way that morning. It's got to be able to do a lot, because ultimately if it doesn't work, it's going to affect the rest of your game. The putter and the driver have so much influence over what you shoot, that those clubs have to be, if anything, dial for any scenario. It's almost like State Farm insurance. Like, they're your insurance policy to play well, in my opinion.
Yeah, you gotta, what do you call it? You gotta bookend them, right? You gotta bookend the bag. If the top of your bag and the very bottom of your bag are solid, then you're at least gonna be in the game. I got a lot of players, that would absolutely love to have a certain part of my game. And I got a lot of players that I would be like, man, if I just had your putter, I'd be four strokes better around.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, and I get this, but I do my little Friday Q&As. And this is why I know that the market, I guess the general population, are looking sort of in the wrong direction when they're buying golf clubs in general. Everybody wants to know what's the anti-left driver. Like, you know, they'll say I'm 115 swing speed and 175, you know, 175 ball speed or whatever. What's the best combo for low launch, low spin, anti-left? I get that question ad nauseum.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, how do you know that that's what you need? You know, like, how do you, and I'm a victim of this before I started working at WRX, I just wanted the one that I thought that if I caught it right, it would go the furthest. Like, that's all I cared about. And I want one I can swing as hard as I can. And if I catch it, it's going to go out there 320. Like, that's really all I cared about. And you have to understand that, like, every golf swing is completely different. And a combo that you think, you know, I could recommend a combo, like, yeah, get vintage black and sim at 8 degrees and turn the face open and, you know, yeah. And then all of a sudden you're hitting it all over the place. But, you know, you might want that low launch, low spin, anti-left driver, but, you know, you might show up at a really skilled hitter. Like, you know, if you end up at Brian Chopp or Ian Frazier in Toronto or one of these guys that really knows what they're doing, they're probably going to, you know, potentially could add loft to your driver. That's why getting fit is so important. And what I learned this, like, I don't know, a year ago, one of my buddies on the TaylorMade truck, this guy named Adrian Rietveld, who fits, like, he fits Rory and Jay Rose and Fleetwood. Like, his resume of people he works with on a weekly basis is nauseating. Like, the top, you know, six of the top 10 players in the world type stuff. And what I always asked him is, like, why do certain players like the face flopped open, and, you know, why do, you know, somebody like Colin Morikawa, who cuts the ball, why is his face angle turned up? And he's like, because the biggest misconception is the guys that want to hit it right to left tend to want an open face because it encourages them to kind of lean into it and try to turn it over. Where the guys that have like a fader like Fred Couples or Colin Morikawa or even in some cases DJ, they like sort of a face that sort of looks towards their left shoulder because it encourages them to cover it, which makes it go left to right. So once again, we're in this conundrum where there's information out there saying, you know, close the face, do this, do that. And he's like, it's so counterintuitive. It's actually not how it works. You know, our understanding of face angles is completely wrong.
Thank you. I mean, for real, thank you for saying that because, you know, like I said, I had a guy in here that he was hitting smash hooks and we got him in Sim Max 10.5, turned up 2 degrees, so made it higher. Now, you and I and anybody that, you know, reads an article on golfwrx.com or understands adjustable drivers, that shuts the face a little bit. So if this player all of a sudden, you know, is got a closed face, you'd think he would hit it more left, but it just wasn't the case. You know, it came down to a little bit of a grip, you know, weaken his grip a little bit. He was strangling a little. So yes, there was a little tip in there, but at the same time, just with the right combo, it was more important for him to have the added loft than the face angle. And we're talking about, this guy's a 20 handicap. He gained 50 yards in the fitting bay. So, you know, it's like, I played with him on Sunday. I saw what was going on, which is always really valuable, by the way. It's amazing when you go play golf with somebody or watch somebody golf, and then you fit them. You know every shot. You've seen every shot. So when they hit it in the fitting bay, you're like, yep, I've seen that shot. I saw that shot. And it's like, all I'm trying to do is get this guy to hit a cut. Like, just, I was like, I don't even care if you push it 10 yards right. Like, we just need that ball going up and down the line, right? And it did, right. And it changed everything. But that's counterintuitive to face angle in what you're saying. So we do, it's tough. We're all still learning. I'm still learning. I mean, I'm sure there's some guys that will say that they know it all, and that's great. But, you know, I'm still learning because it changes with each driver too. You know, CGs change. Everything changes. The perception of face angle changes just based on the top line of a club. Ask some of these PGA Tour pros who can look at one driver and immediately go, yep, nope, this one's, you know, face angle's off. And it might be off by like a half a degree and they can tell.
You get somebody like if I use Jimmy Walker, for example, him and I talk about equipment all the time. And the club, no matter what, when he sets it down, it has to flop open. It just does. Like that's, and the reason why, one, it's because it's the way it's always been. It's what he's used to looking at. But two is, he's sort of a thrower of the golf club. So he doesn't necessarily use his body to hit right to left or left to right shot. He uses his hands. So if you like watch his slow, if you watch his swing in slow-mo, it kind of looks like Jannika Sorensen threw it a little bit and kind of lifts his head and does that. But like, he's a very handsy player at the bottom. So he knows what to do with his hands to make it, you know, he calls it like his favorite shot, like a release fade, which to me is like, you know, he kind of stays behind it and sort of flips his hands through, but at the same time keeps the back of his left wrist sort of there and holds it off for a little bit. But that's like a release fade where a lot of these guys, these young players now are hitting fades. They're not even really holding it off. They're just rotating as hard as they can to the left and the ball just goes out to the right. Like that's how they hit a fade. It's not the same. They don't do it the same way that they used to do it when, you know, when I was coming up. You right. know, like there's no more Duval. There's no more like Duval fades where a guy just completely holds his hands off all day. Or Zach Johnson, I guess, would be sort of a unicorn in that aspect. But you also got to remember with all these companies changing, like Brian, you brought that up about CG placement. Every year that they change the dynamic of that driver, you're changing the DNA of how that thing is going to work for you.
Yep.
So just because you hit Sim in this setting, and Colin Morikawa is the perfect example. He went from M5, 9 to open to 8.5 in his M5, and then he got into Sim and went from 8 to 9.5, which you would think, well, yeah, the loft's the same, but no, the whole dynamic of the driver changed. You know, theoretically, his face shut down, you know, he turned his face up a degree as far as an optics perception, and then it changed because the CG on the Sim is a lot differently placed than it was in the M5. It's a whole other driver. And that's gonna happen for everybody. It's not just Colin Morikawa, it's everybody. So you have to understand that when you're getting into new stuff every year, you have to understand what they did to that thing to make it that way.
Yeah.
And stay completely open-minded to what that means for you. And, you know, I have a question for you, Brian, actually, in your travels as a fitter. How important is head weight to players? Like, how much do you play with head weight?
For me, you play with head weight just to dial in the right swing weight. You know, obviously there's different aspects of things here where, you know, you can talk shaft and, you know, that same player that I was working with ended up, you know, we were working on one shaft when it all came down for like 45 minutes. And then in the last second, we made a change to a counterbalance shaft and it changed the head weight. You know, we went to Riptide CB, the even flow from Project X, and it was like, all of a sudden it lightened up the head, right? But it allowed him to come more down the line instead of so far to the left. And he shallowed out instead of getting so steep and things like that. So, you know, for me, head weight I dial with or play with due to just trying to dial in a swing weight more or less. You know, me personally, I mess around with head weight because I for research purposes and tinkering purposes, I want to see what it does for me. What happens when I add weight and then, you know, in the head, do I start swinging it differently? What happens is you get some drivers and we're talking a matter of 5 to 8 grams of weight in a driver head. It could fluctuate. Say a driver's 196 and you got one that's 203. That weight down at the bottom, changing the swing weight, changing the way the player's body reacts to it, could completely change things like path in their face, and your face to path now all of a sudden changes, and it absolutely changes their entire ball, the ball flight. Changes everything because it changed a little bit of their swing, which is where we get into, all right, well, you can go get lessons and you can work on this for a long time, but what happens if I just play around with different swing weights and different head weights here, and all of a sudden we can get you better swing metrics and get you the desired result without going through tons and tons of drills and changing, and obviously that's another conversation, but, you know, for me, that's what it all comes down to. You know, a lot of times, get somebody in something a little heavier at the head if they're pretty quick and jerky and inconsistent. You know, I'm not talking about like your smooth swinging scratch golfer. Like, oh man, this guy's really quick tempo. Let's throw him in something super heavy. That's not what I'm saying. But that guy that needs a little push to help him smooth himself out to get his club head in a better position, absolutely got to change, you know, or play around with your head weight.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, talking to, like, if you talk to Chris Trott from TaylorMade or you talk to J.J. Van Wiesen, like, all these, because those are the guys I get most of my information from, obviously, is the Tour Truck guys. And
those are good sources.
Like,
those are really good sources.
Those are really good sources, but for, they only deal with the elite of the elite of the elite, and the way that those players, their sensitivity to equipment is a lot different than your normal Joe, even you or I. I mean, yeah. How sensitive these guys are to their golf clubs is way different than anything I've ever seen. And swing weight, he said, you know, a lot of them said this, that swing weight's the most important number to look at for a good golf club. I guess in a general fitting sense, what I've noticed for myself anyways, the club that I tested that I actually hit really well usually doesn't end up in the box when I get it. And I'm talking about before I started working for WRX. Is, you know, I'd get fit or I would try a club and I would love it. And all of a sudden I get the new one. And, you know, the one I tested was D4, and then I'd get another one that it ended up being D1. And that's a totally different golf club. It could be same shaft, same grip, same everything. But the build, and this is why you're in a really cool spot, Brian, because you get to build the clubs that you fit. The build is so important. Actually, could be more important than even the fitting, or as important as the fitting. How that club is put together is huge, because swing weight, making sure that thing is swing weighted, because most general golfers are sensitive to weight, if anything. And you'll change how you swing if the swing weight's not right. If the club's too light for me, I've noticed I pop out of it even more than I always do because I feel like if I don't, then I'm going to swing and miss. Like, yeah. The club's so light. It's just so stuck behind me.
It's
I hate it.
It's really weird.
Yeah, I just can't do it.
When it's too light, I hit the bottom of the face. I hit the bottom of the face when it's too light. And I see it, you know, with GC Quad, it lets you know exactly where you're hitting it. And if I put something too light in my hands, I can't get, even though I don't feel like I'm changing anything, it's almost like it. The lighter weight, as you say, it just, you come up, you can come up. It allows you to. It's quite amazing that it does matter that much. But to your point and everyone else's point, you know, you get a club from, you know, that you got fit with, but did they weigh the head? Did they get the actual swing weight? And then when they built it, did they build it exact same length, exact same grip weight, exact same head weight, and build it to those exact specs? It's tough, man. It's really tough. And luckily we're in a good position where most of the time when people come into our shop, and I know I've talked to Ian Fraser about this a little bit, when somebody comes to him and when somebody comes to me, for the most part, they're ready to go. It's kind of like, man, I'm putting all my trust in you. You know what you're doing. You've got a history of doing this. You know, I followed you for X amount of years, and I trust that what you put me in is the right answer. It makes it that much easier because you can have that conversation with them without them thinking you're trying to sell them on something.
Well, yeah, and it's most good fitters, you know, the cool clubs and the hot sticks and the Brian LaRoche's, Ian Frazier's, I mean, True Spec. I mean, most of the companies do this part really, really well. They understand that, it all has to match up. But as a consumer, like, you have to pay attention to that stuff because, and know, like, ask the fitter when you're done, like, what were the exact specs of the driver that I got fit into? And keeping, you know, start to know that stuff for yourself. Like, you should know, if anything, at the very least, know how much, you know, what swing weight your clubs are. Because if you walk into a shop, you walk into any fitter, say you haven't played golf in 5 years, and you go to a fitter and say, I don't know, my bag's a little this, but I know that, you know, typically my swing weights are, when I play well, swing weights are around D4. I think a good fitter could take that information and go, okay, so he responds well to weight, or he doesn't respond well to a little bit of weight or a little bit of a heavy feel. So that, to me, is a good platform for a fitter to start, because then you're starting to work in a different ballpark as opposed to going, I like stiff shafts and my driver's usually 8.5. Like, that to me doesn't mean fuck all. It's yep. Like, I swing well with D4 swing weights. Like, when I was playing a lot and I knew my equipment well, D4 was my number. That to me is the number that fitters can look at and go, okay, all right, I know where to go. So that means your wedges are a little heavier and you probably, you know, it gives them a place to go. And I think you're going to you'll probably have a quicker time getting a player truly dialed in just with swing weight. This is my opinion. But, yeah. I've noticed that all the best fitters that I've ever worked with are real, real swing weight sensitive, more so than anything else. It's always centered around, you know, the balance of that golf club.
And it should be. 22. It should be, because it changes everything. As we all know, you add more weight to the head, it actually softens the shaft a little bit, you know, which could be a good thing or a bad thing for a player. That's why some players, you know, they just at home cut an inch off their driver and they're like, man, I'm going to hit this straighter. And sometimes it works, and maybe it works because it's lighter overall, lighter swing weight. But then other players are like, man, I just totally ruined my driver because I made it too light. Maybe it stiffened up a tick, and there's just all these variables that you've changed. So it's extremely important. Now, a second ago, you mentioned wedges. You just brought up wedges. You said the word wedge, and I know you and I are both very excited about a golf club that just all the finishes just released as we're recording this. I have the black ones right here in front of me for a build, some RTX Zip Cores from Cleveland. You and I are both very romantic about our history with Cleveland. I know there's great wedges out there, you know, and there's like all-time legend wedges, right? The 588s from Cleveland.
Right.
You know, some of the old Vokies, the Trusty Rusty from Cobra, and you can keep going down the line. The Mac Daddy 2s from Callaway, I think, is their best wedge. You know, all these, right? So I know that you've just recently had an experience, as have I, with the Zip Cores. Would love to hear your thoughts on them.
Yeah, I've been playing Cleveland wedges for like if I was gonna rank my all time favorite wedges, the 588-54, the old one from like the early 2000s when they came out with the raw tour grinds, like that was the best fairway wedge I've ever had in my life. Like that thing was an absolute, and I probably have 4 or 5 of them, same exact wedge. I would just go get a new one. And the 588-60, depending on what one you got, there was one that had sort of a bigger flange on the back. It was more like a Corey Pavin shape. And then there was one that was more like an S grind. It just depends on what store you went to and who had the right one. Like they had a couple of different ones. And that was an amazing lob wedge. You know, that and the 260-12 from Vokey were the two best. And maybe the Ping Eye too. I kind of throw them all in the same bucket for different reasons, but those were the best. But the Cleveland shape, the new one that just came out, which I saw in pictures, and then a buddy of mine had them, and I got a chance to try them a little bit when I was in California. I just felt like I was home again. Like I felt like I was at home. And, you know, and there's some real good wedges out there. Like I had a chance to try the Mizuno wedges, the T20s, I think they're called.
Yep.
Those are awesome. Totally different shape, completely different shape. Obviously the SM8 to me, like of all the wedges that have come out, are the best, you know, those are the best wedges out there just across the board. And maybe it's just cause, you know, Bill's a friend of mine, but like those wedges are really, really good. And I don't have any Vokey. I haven't owned a Vokey wedge in a long time. The Jaws wedges that came out, I think they're phenomenal. I think those are the best Callaway wedges that have been out in a long time besides the X-Fords from like 10, 15 years ago. But these Clevelands, for me personally, this is why I'm so curious to try them out. They just looked like they, when I was, you know, back in late 90s, early 2000s, when I was playing golf, they just look exactly like the wedges looked back then. I'm like, oh, this shape I'm used to. And I don't even know if it's different or whatever. There's just something about looking down at that, like, I know exactly what to do with this thing. I know where to go with this one. There's nothing to get used to here. I can just stick it in my bag and go play. And, you know, Cleveland has that. There's just something romantic. It's like, for me, it's like Titleist golf balls and TaylorMade drivers. I'm just sort of emotionally connected to them all. And these new Clevelands with that tour rack finish and the little T on the side, just like the RTG they used to have. Like, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Take my money. I'm in. I'm super in. Yeah.
So, well, that's just it. And that's the one I actually hit. I hit a 56 degree with, in the raw, the tour rack. And the fact that they're doing that, you know, it's not something that is new, right? Like, obviously there's wedge works, you know, and you could get a raw SMA, you can get it custom grinded. That's always fun. You know, I know on the TaylorMade, the mill grinds, you can get them in raw and you can get them in other finishes through their, my wedge or my MG2, whatever it is. I think, I don't know.
Every OEM has a raw, they all have raw wedges. The only place that doesn't is Ping, but everybody else has a raw wedge now, which is awesome.
Cleveland's jumping in, and they've got the raw heads that you can now do kind of the Wedgeworks treatment, where not only do you get it raw, but hey, you want some heel relief, you want some extra trailing edge relief, you want a, you know, a blunted leading edge, a pre-worn leading edge, you can do those things. And I think that is absolutely fantastic and something I'm really excited for, especially when you go, all right, maybe somebody hits this grind in another company better, right? But maybe they like the look and feel of one of these tour racks or something like that, right? Well, then all of a sudden we can go, all right, well, we can get it, the grind exact, we can get it close. If your feel is something that is completely subjective, but grind, if we get all the shapes and all those parameters the same, should perform. And that's just something as a fitter and a custom builder I'm really looking forward to with the RTX, the Zipcore. And I know there's some other technology to go in there that has to do with weighting and feel, and that might have a little bit to do with it. I know the DG Spinner is back. They got a new tour issue DG Spinner that it's got the same tour issue badging and whatnot on it, you know, as far as that goes. But
that's a different, I mean, for the people that aren't super gearheads, that's True Temper taking a very, 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 very old idea, you know, builder idea, and just rebranding it and making it the Spinner. And all they're doing is, and it's basically in the website, so I'm not giving away any insider information. Back in the day, players used to just take, for their wedges, they would just take an 8-iron shaft and stick it straight in because they wouldn't tip cut it. They would just leave the tip the way that it was. And the reason why is it just, you know, gives you basically an 8-iron shaft with a really soft tip, which obviously if the tip is soft, the theory is that the ball will spin a little bit more. And that's literally all it is. It's just an 8-iron shaft that has a really, really long tip. And players like Tiger did it for a long time until the tour issue won. I think Tiger even could even do it still a little bit. I don't know how they make his wedges or what shafts they stick. I know they're S400s, but I don't know if they still do that old 8-iron trick. But like, that's what Vokey and Bobka and all these guys that used to make wedges back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that's what they would do for all the players. It'd be an S400. They would take an 8-iron shaft out of a set, cut it down to wedge length and stick it in there. Yeah. And the ball would, you know, the players loved how heavy it felt, but at the same time, it was still whippy. And that's literally all it is. And I think that idea with 125 gram shaft, it's not as heavy as like an X, you know, it's like the normal S400.
Well, it's theoretically the same profile as an S200, and that's where we're getting at here. But it's different.
Right.
It's still softer, I believe, in the tip, as you're saying.
Yeah, it is. And see, for me, I like that idea because if I want to make it feel a little head heavier, if it feels still a little light, because I think they come to you at like D4 or D5. But if you're a player that likes D6, D7 in their wedges, which I do, I like really heavy wedges, I'll just stick lead tape to the bottom of it, and I love sticking lead tape on anything. So I like that I can do that. And it's going to feel like my wedges from the past, because all my old wedges from back in the day all had 8-iron shafts in them. So for me, it's like, I'm loving that idea.
I have. That is a trick. So I don't do the 8-iron S400 wedge shaft. I do a lot of the X100 8-iron in the wedge shaft. And I play X1s in my irons. I play X1 in like a 50-degree wedge. And in my 56 and 60 currently, I play S400. It does get a little heavy. I play overlink, and the X100 allows me to save a little bit of weight. You know, if people don't know, the S400 is heavier than the X100. And I actually do a lot of builds with, I've got four of these 8-iron X1s in front of me that are for wedges, and a couple of them are for 56 degree and 60 degree demos. I'm going to cut one up for demos because I believe that performance wise, there's some gain there, especially with feel. The next set of wedges I get, I'm actually building with the X100 8-iron shaft. So it's funny that you came up and you said that unsolicited, no prep, and we're talking about that because that is a really cool trick. For me, I'm looking for lower launch out of my wedges. So whatever I can do to lower launch, and if a softer tip allows me to do that, even if it spins more, I'm more than okay with that.
Well, that's the idea. So like what a lot of these companies are doing is they're raising the CG on the wedges a little higher so the ball comes out lower. So like if you take, it's the idea with high toe, mill grind too from TaylorMade to a certain extent, not as much, but a little bit. You know, there's all these high toe wedges, and there's all these, you know, they're moving the weights around the wedges to hit it lower with more spin. And it's one thing to configure the head to do that, but it's another thing to actually just have the shaft do it for you. Because I like to hit my wedges low. I'm constantly just trying to hit these low bolts with my wedge that spin.
It's
and what
beautiful.
I've noticed is that, yeah, which is like my favorite thing, because that's how I used to play. You know, back when you're playing tour blotters or titleist professionals, like you had to play it off your right foot and trap the hell out of it. And that's the shot that you'd want to hit. Like you never hit, you know, try to hit a high wedge. You'd always just try to drive it down. And you could do that because of the way that the wedges were made back then. And I think a lot of it had to do with the grooves too. Obviously with box grooves, you could do it to put the ball stayed on the face a little longer.
Right.
But what I've noticed is that whenever I try to take like if I have like a current model 60 degree wedge, for example, and I want to hit it down, I've noticed that if I don't catch it kind of like a driver, the ball will ride up the face and I end up hitting this floaty little kind of weird, you know, shot that I'm not used to seeing. And I've noticed that when I take out like I have this old 588 Cleveland from like 15 years ago, and I can take it out and play it back in my stance and the ball comes out like a knee-high fastball and stops when it hits the green.
I have some coming for the shop that I will be posting about and talking about a lot, and they're probably going to be some of the most hit demos. I don't know. I might sneak them out on the golf course too. I'm just saying. So
let me know how they go.
You will know before anyone else, Johnny. I appreciate you coming on the pod, man. We'll do it again next week. All right, buddy.
All right, pal.